Thank you, Joel. My name is Sharon. I'm an alcoholic, and it's good to be here. Sitting down, I've been out with my dog, and it's hot today, and she wanted to come in before me today. So that's a good walk with my dog. Anyway, it's good to see everybody here. I think today I have 16,432 days. So it's like I like to count my days right now because I remember every single day that I woke up sober. I remember every single one of those days. And that's an awesome thing that we wake up sober. And I know I want to welcome, was it Katarina or Katharina? And Katharina and Randy, congrats on 30 days. Stay with us. I just love that the Age of Miracles is still with us. And I'm just going to read this little paragraph. It may seem incredible that these men are to become happy, respected, and useful once more. How can they rise out of such misery, bad repute, and hopelessness? The practical answer is that since these things have happened among us, they can happen with you. Should you wish them above all else and be willing to make use of our experience, we are sure they will come. The Age of Miracles is still with us. Our own recovery proves that. And I love that I constantly find new things in the book Alcoholics Anonymous. I think because of, they say any spiritual book will continue to grow with you. And that is very, very true in my experience. And as my friend Sandy Beach said, that the big book, it is not the treasure, it is the treasure map. So if you have that book in your hand and you have a guide, because, you know, if we go out there looking for treasure, you know, we're going to have a guide because, you know, you can't go climb a mountain you've never seen before without a guide or something, a map, you know. So I'm so grateful to have had guides in my life the last, almost 45 years. It's amazing. I've been a little bit nostalgic because I think that happens at every milestone in life, whether it's a birth, a death, a great joy, a great sadness. I think that milestones, as my sponsor clients, he says, he's been my sponsor the last 35 of my almost 45 years. He said, they're just signposts on the road telling you you're on the right path. So it doesn't matter if you have 2 days, 4 days, 30 days, 50 years, we're on the right path if you're seeing those signposts, and that's a good thing. I grew up in Iowa, and it was my first resentment, and I couldn't wait to get out of there. I was a seeker, and I was seeking, I don't know what I was seeking, something bigger than me. That's it, you know, I think I was seeking something bigger than me. I used to think I was seeking, you know, Gandhi's teachings and seeking, you know, the mothership, where is it? You know, I was seeking those things, but I was seeking something bigger than me because I knew whatever I had, my father couldn't fix it. And he's got four children and everybody but me kind of followed the yellow brick road to what you're supposed to do in life. And I was the one that, I was the rebellious one, the defiant one. I didn't start out that way, but that's where it started after I started drinking. I had a change of personality, really. And I started to do things like skip school, find the booze, steal the booze, whatever it was. I loved it. I loved what alcohol did for me. It connected me to you. It connected me to whatever that I needed to be connected to, whether it was you, whether it was, you know, something in the sky, something, you know, way out there. I felt connected, and alcohol could do that for me. And in a room alone, it made me feel connected. So I was connected to alcohol from the beginning. And they say that 1 out of 10 people have that adverse obsession, which I had to write down for my first step. I had to write down how I could only have one drink. If there were some times, my sponsor had me write that down. And there were some times. But as I went along my my defiant way in my life, I began to have to, you know, slide across the bar my dad's love, slide across the bar my art talent, slide across the bar my dignity, slide across the bar the love of my family, slide across the bar my loving God, slide across the bar my passion for life, slide across the bar everything important to me, because anytime there was a fork in the road, I took alcohol. And that's what I got kicked out of places that people were living on the edge, like a commune that in Huntington Beach that ended up panhandling for a living. And I was a terrible panhandler, and I'm a drinker, and they're not drinkers. So of course I stood out. So of course when I drank their bong wine, they got mad at me. took me on a picnic and left me on a mountain. Of course, I was going to have some physical problems. As I, you know, I had a gallbladder not working. I had pancreatitis and the end of my drinking. I got asked to leave the organic. Well, I left before the organic people came back. I ended up in an organic community in northern Wisconsin where somebody said, let me take care of you. And it was not taking care of me. It was working. If you're in an organic community, you're working. But they all went off and did primal therapy. And I, you know, I was already kind of, you know, persona non grata around any of those people. Because I told them what I thought about them. And when I get drunk, I'm rebellious and I'll kick their banjo and take off their Hootenanny records. You guys are boring. So they went off to do primal therapy, and we had 50 head of organic sheep, which I got drunk and screamed at, and that was my primal. And I went to harvest my crop back in the woods, Maui Waui seeds, one seed at a time, a lot of organic sheep dung on it, short growing season, tall, beautiful crop. And so I thought, I'm going to harvest that before they come back and getting out of town. And that was a place where my mother thought maybe Sharon will make it, because she knew the guy I was with. We had grown up together, and she thought, okay, maybe she'll make it. I mean, I remember we gave them like maple syrup we had made. If you've ever made maple syrup, it's a lot of work. It's a lot of work. And I had made some logos. And so everybody that holiday got maple syrup we had made. And, you know, it was just that she thought, okay, well, maybe this will work. So when I harvested my crop and didn't make the money because I forgot the crop back on the farm, and I joined the carnival because it was there. That was my way out of town. And I called my mother from Arkansas, and I said, Mom, I'm in Arkansas now, and I joined a carnival called Mad Armstrong Shows. And she was really quiet. Really quiet. It's not a day you want to hear your daughter call, say, hey, Mom, I'm with the carnival now. So I'm not hurting anyone but me. Please don't cry. I'm not hurting anyone but me. I'm writing a book, Mother. I'm writing a book. But that was the time I saw that my mom kind of just, she couldn't believe my life anymore. My mom stuck with me all the way. My dad and I, you could cut the tension with a knife after I was in my 19th year of life, because I always had to argue with him about anything. And one day my father asked me, how are you? You look weird. I know he used the weird, but you look not good. Tell me what's going on. Okay, Dad, sit down. And I told Dad things that dads don't need to know about their daughters. So I saw my father look away, set his jaw, so that he wouldn't say anything. And that's the way my dad and I lived for 8 years. Never rode in the same car, never had breakfast at the same table. And, you know, if I called home and he answered, the phone went right to Mom. So now my mother's crying and she's not buying it. And she had to literally go back up to that farm in northern Wisconsin from eastern Iowa, which is a 5-hour trip, to get her things back that she had given me for possibly making a life for myself, like some of her antique furniture and things like that she gave to me to use in that non-insulated schoolhouse that we were living in. Cold. Yeah, it'd be minus 30, and we have to stoke a fire to get warm. If you want to have tea or, you know, boil anything, you got to stoke a fire. It was, oh, what am I doing here? And I am the drinker that stands out. So after the carnival, call with Mom, it was like, don't even call home anymore. So I felt very separated from my family by King Alcohol, but it was a fork in the road, and I took it because I could still count on alcohol working in my life. And eventually the carnival said to get rid of me too, so I didn't even fit in with the carnies, which are all off the grid. They're all off the grid. And you know, because I had this little shooting gallery and I didn't want to give away teddy bears, even though those little 12-year-old boys, you know, they had their BB guns and they shot down the appropriate amount of targets to win a teddy bear. And I would say, no, you didn't. And they say, yes, we did. No, you didn't. You know, and I'd pop that target up and they'd say, well, we're going to tell our dads, go ahead, go whine. I'm drinking tequila. I am not nice. And so the dads would come, and then there'd be some argument, and then it would be bigger. And then if all the other carnies, you know, that was the code, we had to help each other. So they would come, and then I would mace somebody because I hitchhiked a lot. So I always had mace in one of my boots. And then we get closed down. Matt would have to peel off some of his money in his pocket and buy our way out of town. And the second time it happened, it was in Louisiana. And that's where the owner of the show, that's where he wintered. That's his home base. That's where he knows all of the cops all around. I don't even know what they call them. We call them the parish finest because it was parish down there. So Matt said to those guys, go get that little girl. She's staying at this motel. She's trouble. I don't want her in the carnival anymore. I'll get my stuff back, but she's got stuff in that room and you can find it here and here and here. And they came in at 8 a.m. one morning, which of course I'm not awake, and pushed the door open. And that was me going off to Bogalusa, Louisiana lockup. Talk about a big bug. Oh my God, they could drag your shoes across the floor at night. You know, somebody was like making a wagon and trying to train them to pull a little wagon. I mean, it was insane. And I had actual DTs there. I mean, I had auditories. I had things that happened from time to time, but this was actual DTs with things that, you know, on the TV talking to me. It was in the lobby and I could see it and they were talking to me and people had pointed heads and I'm like anxiety ridden. So I took a piece of glass I found and made little cuts all over my face and arms because they came in at night in this big pen of women and took one out one at a time and then brought them back at daylight. It was a crazy place, but they left me alone because they said she's crazy. And I would just like with my blood, I would go, and they did leave me alone. I'm a survivor. My defiance will keep me alive. That's the beauty of being as defined as I was when I ran with these people that really didn't care for human life. You know, they cared about themselves. And the carnival never came back. And so they cuffed me one day. I was there maybe a week and a half, threw me in this room, drove me somewhere, threw me in this office building, and there was my father, who had gotten on a plane in Iowa. Nobody in my family is alcoholic. Nobody in my family's been to jail. Nobody in my family's caused so much heartache and broken hearts. So I'm so grateful we got to the amends process in the beginning of my sobriety. I'm so grateful. I think I had 35 years with my mom sober and 24 years with my, no, 20, yeah, 24 years with my dad sober. So we had a lot of time to mend the fences. But I didn't know that then, but I just remember how I felt that day. They said they were letting me go, and he wrote a big check to this bail bondsman and the lawyer and the judge. So it was kangaroo court, and they sent me back to jail, and they didn't let me out. And my dad went home to Iowa and thought they let me out, and he was just doing the patriarchal thing because that's my dad. But I talked to my dad when I was 20 years sober about that day, and he said, all you said the whole time they asked you anything was, I'm not guilty and it's not my fault. And I totally believed it. I am building a case. I am the victim. I am the victim. And I'm good at building a case. And so I found the French Quarter of New Orleans when they finally let me out. And that's where I drank hard and heavy. And my blackouts were getting longer. And my blackouts were, I said to myself, I remember saying to myself after I woke up in Florida swimming with dolphins, I thought they were sharks. I had started drinking in a bar in the French Quarter, and I was with these people I didn't know who were really mad at me. And finally someone said, well, you know, you drove the wrong way on the freeway. We were all screaming and you wouldn't get off. And I was like, oh, I was kind of shocked with that one. I didn't remember any of it. So I thought to myself, I better take better care of myself in my blackouts. It's not like, oh my God, you're drinking too much. You burned down your life. You're sick with this pancreatitis that comes. Your gallbladder's been removed. You're starting to lose jobs in the French Quarter, which is hard to do when you're working at a local bar. And so in 1975, from April to when I get sober on August 20th, it's when my alcoholism really took me down. And because I was always looking for another way. I was always looking for the easier, softer way somehow. But now in April, I'm unemployable. I got asked to leave my very seedy, sorry little bar in the French Quarter because I have a bad attitude. And my alcoholic friends aren't drinking with me anymore because they don't want to, because I was hitting bottom before they were. They told me two of my friends are sober. And they said, yes, you were hitting bottom way before we did. And I found myself trying to get out of town. I ended up at Barney's Beanery in West Hollywood, where I saw the Big Book Alcoholics Anonymous, second edition, big white letters on that navy blue. And she was passed out by the book and coming to. And to me, people were signing something, which I think it was her court card. But I'm drinking in there and feeling sorry for her. She's got to go to Alcoholics Anonymous. And the bartender called her a taxi. She took her book. She wobbled out the door and fell into a cab. And I had my Jose Cuervo nice and neat, no lime, no salt, big rock glass. That's the way I drank my tequila. And we all gave her a toast as she fell out the door. Good for you, Chris. Go to A&A. And I was going to not be able to get a job. I was asked to leave after, I don't know, just a short shift because I couldn't remember where the drinks on my tray went. And the owner came over and had to help me as I stood in the middle of the floor. And he said, we'll pay you for tonight. Please don't come back. And I got to tell you, I was bloated. I was wearing this red dashiki and I had a Panama hat on so you wouldn't look in my eyes. I had all my possessions that I cared about, which was not much, in a backpack. And I had a book by Baba Ram Dass called Be Here Now, which meant to me, wasn't a big spiritual search. It was, I can do what I want when I want to do it. And that's the way I live. No more dogs, no more boyfriends, no more calling home. My mother didn't know where I was, and I was unemployable, and I had no place to live. And somebody was kind to me, and I lived in one place for a while until I locked them out of the kitchen and threw food all over the walls, because I don't even know I'm doing this. I don't even know that I'm at the end of my drinking. And I ended up back in New Orleans for a brief period and met somebody going to Hawaii, and I said, let's go. Because it seemed to me I couldn't even get my job back anywhere in the French Quarter. And it seemed to me all my friends didn't want to hang with me anymore. And it was true. So there I am, again, stuck at Barney's Beanery. And I meet this girl who I stay in touch with her through a friend of mine who's sober. I stay in touch about her. And she's the last picture I saw of her. Oh, man. She doesn't look anything like the person I remember who was rough when I met her. And she's still, her brother died. And I don't know how she's alive. But that's what scares me. If I would go out, I don't know if I'd die right away, but I might look just like my friend and live a long time in pain and agony and be too chicken to jump off a 44 floor building. And so that's a reminder. But I met her and we partied together. I had no place to live and I'd sleep in a garage with cots where somebody always provided the vodka in the freezer. And that's, we'd all get up and hit on that vodka. Now, my mother thinks I'm back in the French Quarter somewhere. My mother has no idea that I'm homeless in Los Angeles. And it's not a friendly city to be homeless in. But most of the people that took me in were drinkers like me. And on July 27th, my friend and I met some guys at the bar and we went out to Palm Springs on Harleys. And I think they just needed a little extra weight. It was very windy going through the desert. We left at like 3 a.m. or something. And so they needed a little extra weight. So I was about, you know, I weigh 140, but I was like 175 pounds. I was very bloated and very sick and very toxic. And I unbathed, water hurt. I don't know about you, but showers hurt. And that was what was getting ready to come to you, to Alcoholics Anonymous. But it took one final thing for me to slide across the bar. And that was my life. Because at some point, this girl left me in the car. I'm so grateful for this moment in my life. I'm sorry. It's like this emotion of gratitude for my bottom, which got me here. And I hope to goodness sakes you've hit a bottom if you're new. And there's going to be other emotional and spiritual bottoms in sobriety too, which to me signify growth. If you stay, the hallway is crowded with people between what was and what could be. And going back that way, going back where you came in, doesn't guarantee anything. But to me, if I stay one day at a time in whatever hallway I'm in, the door opens on a new beautiful view I didn't even imagine. So my last drinking bout, I ended up in a car. She left me in a car with people we didn't know. They took me somewhere. They broke my jaw in three places. They smashed my nose. They basically drugged me around on the cement. The doctor said you were very lucky that another bone in your face didn't break because my cheekbones were just so sore I couldn't even touch them for 6 months. And they rolled me off the side of the road, and that's when I had my spiritual experience because I lifted my head up even though I had a concussion. I lifted my head up because I heard the car door slam and I thought they're coming back. And I thought, who cares? But what I heard was a voice deep down with that fact deep down within us. I heard a voice. I believe that's where it came from. It said, get up. I want to live. And I guess I did. And I guess I ended up somewhere where someone called the ambulance and I was in the hospital being prepped for surgery to put my jaw back on and set my nose. And I was the victim because the police were there and this was, you know, my name was after the word victim that I wrote. And it was like, oh my God, finally somebody knows what I am. I mean, really, it's like, you know, very macabre, but I was thinking if I could have smiled and said, thank you for that, I would have. And I was in the hospital for 2 weeks and they just morphined me up. It was like, and I saw the chart one day, it said addictive personality because they weren't coming fast enough. I never was a morphine girl or a heroin girl or, you know, a Reds girl or any of that. I'm up and running and, you know, people that were face down going, let's party, you know, was like, okay, have your party on the floor. I'm out of here. You know, it's just the way I was. And so, but that morphine they kept giving me and then they didn't come in time. And so addictive personality on my chart, but I got no cards. I had no friendly direction. I had nothing. I didn't know what I was going to do. And this man who was actually dating the girl with the big book in the bar, who had heard about what had happened to me because my friend came back to Barney's and said, well, this happened to Sharon, you know. And so she knew what happened. So I think she sent her boyfriend out to get me because I had nowhere to go. She was in and out of AA until she died of wet brain at 31 years old. Her name was Chris. And he came and got me and said, I know you don't have a place to go. You can sleep on my couch. And I was grateful for it. And then on August 20th, he was buying me cheap red wine and have to unscrew the top and stick a straw in that cheap gallon of wine and stick a straw through the wires on my face where the tooth had been kicked out so I could suck on the wine. I'm just sucking on wine. There is no more. Let's go start over. Phoenix has drive-through liquor stores. It's on a grid, north, south, east, west. I thought, well, I could always go to Phoenix because I could find my way around and go through drive-through liquor stores. I thought that was fabulous. I had never seen them before, but I was bone tired. And he said to me, Sharon, you got to leave. You're depressing me. And so I called my mom. I had nobody else to call. And I talked like this. And my mother said, Sharon, we can't help you anymore. Go to the Salvation Army. And if my mother would have sent $20, you'd have another speaker. Norm Elpeach talked a lot when I was new, and he talked about seconds and inches, seconds and inches, seconds and inches, that we are the lucky ones to be here. And if that $20 bill would have come in the mail to where I was staying, I would not be here. Because what I did was pick up a phone number, which was on the table with the telephone. We used to have these phones. And the telephone book, it could have been slid under the telephone book and I wouldn't have called her. But that girl, Chris's number was there. I don't know if she's dating this guy. I just know she was always nice to me. So I called her. And I think about the seconds and inches of that phone number being there looking at me. And she said, Sharon, I can't help you. I heard what happened to you, but this girl, Suzanne, can. Because she was drinking that day. So she gave me a 5-year sober member of Alcoholics Anonymous to call. I don't know that I'm calling a member of AA. I just need help. So what happened was she sent over two beautiful girls to get me. She knew what liquor store I was living above. She knew where to tell me to sit. She knew. She said, put your joint down. I thought, where is she? How does she know this? You know, she read my mail, got my attention. I went out and sat on the steps of going up to that apartment where we lived, that liquor store. And this car pulls up with these shiny, beautiful faces. And I was like, no, Their hair's shiny. They're shiny. The car's shiny. But I was so tired. They literally just each picked me up by one arm and took me and put me in the back of the Volkswagen where I couldn't get out. And all I remember was they talked incessantly about themselves, trying to, you know, share their experience, strength, and hope with me. But I don't hear anything. I just think, when are they going to ask me about me? I've got this newspaper clipping in my pocket. I don't know where they're going. I just think I'm getting a place to stay. I don't know they're members of AA. I am not tracking on that. And we go to a church and I go, oh, a church. Me and God had a big fight. One fingered peace sign when I left that Catholic church and gave it to the priest. And I just thought, God, stay on your side of the world. I'll stay on my side of the world. And I thought, okay, I got to play the game because I need a place to stay. So I'm sitting there, people looking at me like, or shaking my hand and saying, welcome. I thought, well, this is weird. And you look tired, kid. Take your pack off and stay with us. How does he know I'm tired? I was a mess when I came here. And the guy at the podium, I thought was the preacher, and he rang my bell. He said he always waited for the spaceship to land and say, you can come home now, Bill. And I thought, oh my God, I'm with spaceship people. Finally, that's what connected me. That's what woke up a little ember of life in there. So I was like, oh, spaceship people. And then this guy came up to me and put a big book down in front of me, Alcoholics Anonymous. Oh, man, is that where I am? Okay. You know, they're nice to me. I don't know what I'm doing. And he wrote in my book, my sobriety date. He got my name out of me. I couldn't talk the first 3 months in AA. I was in AA. So let me tell you, everybody talked to me. They're going to talk to people who can't. We like to talk. I mean, if you can't talk back, oh, you're just a willing person in this conversation to be a good listener. And I learned a lot by listening to you guys. But Maurice Zelotow, who was a Hollywood writer, he wrote about Marilyn Monroe and all kinds of people. He met all the stars. He was a great guy. He was a smart man. And he wrote in my big book, Echo Park, LA, California, August 20th, 1975. And my name, Sharon. And it's in pencil. It's in pencil. I love it. I can barely read it now. I don't know. I'm going to have to put something over it to read Maurice, to keep Maurice's writing in there because he's at the big meeting in the sky. And that's what started. And their sponsor had said, don't send her up until those liquor store lights turn off. Because I'm still in touch with both of them today. They're still sober. One went out, but she's back. And they remind me all the time of how I was when they picked me up and how we sat in that car in an August, unwashed, detoxing, sitting in the back of a Volkswagen, can't get out, just sitting there trying to breathe and listen to them who were sharing with me things I didn't understand. And as soon as the liquor store lights turned off, their sponsor said they could send me back upstairs to sleep one more night. And then they moved me out and I slept on floors and I was not able to go to a recovery house. They had one recovery house in West LA for women and they wouldn't take me because my physical appearance. They couldn't feed me. I couldn't feed me. My mother finally sent me a blender so I could eat through the straw. My God. And then I got a sponsor because they wouldn't leave me alone. And the sponsor said, you know, you can come sleep on my couch. I was like, oh my God, get a sponsor. Your life gets better. That's how simple it was for me in the beginning. You know, but you saw that it was worth saving and you gave me a shot. And Chuck C talks about that. He said, everybody gets a shot. Everybody gets grace. Everybody gets compassion. Love is 1,000 to nothing. It's not 1,000 to 1. It's 1,000 to nothing. We do this for fun and for free. And, you know, if you're new, there's a couple of you, fairly new, that 10 people's lives have gotten better the moment you come in and sit down with us, that they know you're okay. So now, you know, one of my big awakenings in my life sober has been, man, it wasn't even about me from the beginning. It takes a long time to get there, though, to be awake and then to understand. Even my coming day A was healing for my parents. My mother used to say when I would call home at the holidays, because the family on both sides knew something was wrong with me, because I would have fits. I would come drunk. I would have to drive alone. I would sit with the children at the card tables instead of the big table at Thanksgiving. Well, they actually put me there. So it was like, all right. And I just was not cooperative and I didn't engage with my family. So when they found out I was doing better and I would call at the holidays and my mother would be with, one family or the other family, but I'd have to call both and tell her Merry Christmas. And then she would get off the phone. And my brother said, all of the aunts would come around and grandpa would come around and go, how's she doing? And my mother would say in a whisper, she's in AA. She didn't know what AA was, but she knew it was anonymous. So she knew to whisper it. I was going to be the example for Alcoholics Anonymous to my family, which is a ripple. If you think about what the example is that we give, whether it's, you know, pausing and not reacting, getting in your car and driving to, you know, call your sponsor somewhere and coming back and helping the family do the dishes or helping the family wrap presents or, you know, volunteer to go get food. Be just a good daughter, a good family member. Boy, that pause button made a big difference because I could have blown it with my family. There was one time in the van that my dad picked me up. It was my sister's wedding, my younger sister's wedding. I flew in from California. I was tired. It was a night flight. They're picking me up in Cedar Rapids, Iowa at like 7 a.m. And when I connected in Chicago, I found a place to sit to do my morning meditation. Thank you, God, because that's what I need every morning. I need to find my pause button again. I need to find my compassion that I can't discriminate to compassion. I can't have that kind of compassion that, well, you get it, you don't get it, you get it, because that's coming from me. And I want to come from intuitive thought and a higher source. So I had found my little spot to meditate. And so my dad picked me up. Everybody's in the car. And we're going, driving down Cedar River Road. It's a beautiful place. I grew up in a beautiful part of the world. And my dad's driving. My sister's in the front seat. And they're talking finance. And it's like, always with the Mensa. Always with the brilliant one. Always you and her talking about your business. Okay. And then I listen to my younger sister who's getting married in the backseat with my mom. And they're talking about fashion and what she's going to buy for the you know, the bridesmaid and all of her people standing up for her, the gifts. And I thought, I just got off a plane to California. You're not going to ask me what's hip? Fashionista here, mom, sister. But no, they didn't ask. And then my brother, this was the big one, sitting with the brother-in-law in the second seat, talking about fishing. And he's a commercial fisherman in Alaska to this day. But my brother's talking to him, and I almost said, come on, Miles, I taught you how to put a worm on a hook, because we live by a river. I taught you how to fish. And then I'm realizing that I'm having this sobbing cathartic in the middle of the van making noise, slobbering, making noise. And my dad stops the van, turns around and looks at me, and he said, are you okay? Oh, they're all here. All of them. I've got to pull out my case list. I've got this, you know, soapbox that's just, I can put it right down and get ready. But what I had was a voice from that pause button that said, get out of the van. So my dad gave me some water. I got out of the van. They're back to their conversations like I just didn't have this big upheaval. And I stood outside of the van and I was like, I felt like I was in a different zone. And I looked at the sun and the beautiful morning sun, and there was a beautiful cornfield there, and it had, the sun was shining, and there's like a layer of life above the cornfield. I mean, you can listen to corn grow. It is just the most beautiful thing to lay in a cornfield and hear it grow. I've done third steps in cornfields. It's been fabulous. But I saw the life. I saw the clouds. I saw the beauty. And I said, it's okay to be from Iowa. It's okay to be part of that family. And I got back in the van and I kept my mouth shut. And I kept my mouth shut so much because I went home and made my amends after my inventory, very cursory with my dad. He just wanted me to be happy. My mom and I were fine. At 5 years, I got another sponsor. My dad walked me down the aisle at 2.5 years, and we went to a meeting, and you took him to the literature table. So my father's a reader, and he read the big book. And he's got books stacked by his chair. That's the way my dad is. He's, you know, maybe has the TV on, but he's reading. He's always reading. And that's my older sister, just like dad, always reading. That's why they were smart, I think. So I thought, well, they're reading. I'm not going to read. I was reading the classics in sobriety that I said, I'm not reading that. Funny. So my dad read it, and he ran a calculator tape because he saw there in the book, most alcoholics owe money in the amends part. And my sponsor had said to me, you know what, it's time to call your dad and pay him back the money you owe him. I was 5 years sober, and I went, okay, he doesn't need it. So I called him, and he gave me a total. He answered the phone, gave me the total. I, like, my mouth hung open. It was so high. I called my sponsor back. She laughed. And my mother told me after my father was killed in 99 on a freak accident on his land. He was gone in a second. But my mother told me some things about my dad after he was gone because she knows I'm defiant. If she would have said, your father read that in the book, went out to the office, took out your dossier, put every receipt, everything in there. I had forgotten about the car I took. That's what made it so high. Everything in there. He ran the calculator tape. He put it on page 78 where most alcoholics owe money, circled it in red. And my mother said, he told me, if I call and ask, there it is. And he's not home, but he was home. And he gave it to me. It was like, oh my God, it's so high. She laughed. And then I called him back because we talked about my better job and payment terms. I said, he accepted. She said, okay, then you're not going to be late with that check. Bill and Bob are watching you. What? So I always sent that check on time because Bill and Bob are watching me. And then she said, because I have been loved by the giants in Alcoholics Anonymous, and many aren't here. Many aren't here anymore. Okay, so she's even up there now. But she said, are you willing to grow through this with your dad? Which meant to me something more she wants, because she knew the experience, strength, and hope she had. She could show me a new view that I didn't think was possible. It says in the book, My Little Designs and Plans. My little. It also said, she showed me, remember at the beginning, we agreed that we'd go to any lengths for victory over alcohol. We agreed? Okay, I don't remember, but you know, they pull these things out at the right time. So I said, okay, what do you want? And she said, put a note about your life with that check. Do not send the cold, hard cash alone in an envelope, and don't be late because Bill and Bob are watching. So she'd check on me if I wrote the note. And yes, it was hard. It was very hard. But somewhere in those 4 and 10 months of my dad getting a consistent check and a consistent note and letter, something started to heal. And after 4 years and about 10 months, my dad called me the day after Christmas. He said, Merry Christmas, daughter. I don't want your money anymore. No more. It's done. But don't stop sending me your notes. And the healing was there because, are you willing to grow through this with your dad? My sponsors have always given me truth with kindness, truth with a solution. That's the kindness. You're not going to tell me that I'm a defiant, you know, loner or whatever it is, but you're going to give me the solution to that. And that's, I've never heard anyone in Alcoholics Anonymous say, we don't stay sober through that. You got to leave. There's an answer, a solution for everything here. You just stay through it and get through the hallway. And yeah, so my mother also told me that, did you know your father 12-stepped the town drunk? I said, no. And I think I could have blown it that day in the van, right? I could have blown it so that he would have said, Alcoholics Anonymous doesn't work. What he said to this guy, John, who was the town drunk, came to my dad, because people came to my dad. And he said, nope, it's not your wife's fault. You're not getting a divorce, John. You're an alcoholic. Alcoholics Anonymous has helped my daughter. Maybe it'll help you. And gave him the book. And this was after my dad was gone. Had no idea. And I spoke about it because it was on my heart at a meeting north of L.A. I didn't want to go that night. I was tired. I didn't want to have a carpool. I was grumpy, but I have smart feet. And if I say yes to something, my feet show up first before my head can catch up. And so I went that night, and it was raining, and it took me forever. And I started out the talk with what my mother had told me about the town drunk and my dad. And after the meeting, this girl came up to me and she said, hi, can I talk to you? And I said, sure. And she said, you recognize me? And I said, kind of, but not really. And she said, what her name was. I said, oh my God, I used to babysit you in Lisbon, Iowa. I smoke pot. Are you okay? I was like, I wouldn't drink when I babysat, but I smoke pot. And she said, yeah, but I got to tell you something. You know, you talked about my Uncle John. I said, that's your uncle, a town drunk? And she said, yeah, that's my Uncle John, and he's still sober. And 2 years ago, I went home to a family reunion, and my Uncle John 12-stepped me, and I have 2 years. could have blown it that day in the van. It's so important to be a good example because I have no idea who's watching. No idea where the ripples are going to go. But every once in a while, if you stay in the game, you get to touch the veil and see the ripple hit the shore. But everything's for fun and for free, 1,000 to nothing. And I'm just about done, but I want to tell you about my Casey. My husband left me for a newcomer. That was terrible. Clancy became my sponsor then because my sponsor had 21 days off of a plane smoking pot in Paris, France. And so he was louder than my head, thank God. And he didn't let me throw hot coffee on the new couple. He didn't let me become a victim and stay betrayed. I was very pissed off at all of you. And one night this lady came and looked at me and looked at the newcomer, and I wouldn't move my legs for her to get in the aisle because I'm pissed off at all of you. And my first sponsor's husband wrote in my book, Sharon, humility is what is left after the pain has been removed from humiliation. I was like, well, thank you. Okay. I did my inventory again. I stayed on my side of the street. I didn't make my son hate them. I bit my tongue off practically. And then 1 year, 1 month, and 14 days later, after healing from that, I met my man, Casey, and we were together 24 years. And we did AA, and our house was full of AA, and we had a lot of fun together. And he had a diagnosis of malignant melanoma, and they gave us 7 months, and he got 2 years and 2 months. And I want to thank the men in AA because you took him to the treatments. He didn't want me to go to those treatments. He didn't want me to see somebody that was in there last week is never coming back because he has an expiration date. He knows it. And then at the meetings, people would want to talk to him about their cancer or their great aunt Martha who went to Lourdes and here's some Lourdes water. And he said, Sharon, I'm just here for an AA meeting and I can't get one. So I talked to somebody I knew, and the next week at every meeting my husband was at, you men sat around him and you talked about golf and you talked about your day. Thank you. Thank you, Alcoholics Anonymous. There's always a solution. I got to hold him on his last moments and it was beautiful. And I miss him every day. And I'm taking his ashes all over the world. I know, get over that, right? I think broken, open hearts heal bigger. You know, I bungee jumped with him in New Zealand. He's in this beautiful glacier in Alaska he loves. I got a AA pilot friend to take me there. When we turned that corner and I saw that glacier, he got in the plane with me. I am open to being the best Sharon I can be today. I am open to intuitive thought. I am open to helping all these beautiful women that asked me to sponsor them. And look at the in the line meeting. We had 143 girls and we had 24 newcomers. Don't tell me Zoom's not working. It's working good. I'm sitting here with my loving God today, and you're sitting there with your loving God today. And I just want to thank you for being with me on this ride. Thank you.